This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Bruce Costin has the job most kids dream about, pet doctor. Of course, while from a child's eye view, taking care of dogs and cats and rabbits and hamsters and parakeets sounds like the greatest thing ever, when you grow a bit older, you realize becoming a veterinarian is hard. Maybe physicist or rocket scientist or radio announcer would be a bit more realistic. But Bruce never lost the dream. Although there have been some twists and turns along the way, many of them documented in his newest book. For this Valley vet has not only decades of experience doctoring critters back to health, he's become quite the accomplished author. In both careers, he says there's one overarching goal, nurturing what he calls an almost magical bond between pets and their people. We'll ask him to explain right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. The book is titled The Gift of Pets, Stories Only a Vet Could Tell. Its author is veterinarian Bruce Costin. Dr. Costin, thanks for making time for us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So can you explain the bond between people and pets?
No, I can't. Because if I tried to explain it, there would be a bunch of people who would know intimately what I'm talking about. And then there would be another group of people who would have no idea. And so explaining it is not very effective. People know it or they don't know it.
But there is something about it that causes you to put in the title of your book the word gift. So explain that to me, please.
Well, because I know that there are some people who have this gift and other people that don't have this gift, I've always considered it a real privilege that I've been blessed with it. And I have considered it a gift to be full of empathy for God's creatures besides people. And it's something that just really tugs at the heart. It really involves people there at a very deep core level. And it certainly has me. It's guided my career choices, and it's formed my educational basis. It's given me direction and focus and motivation. It's been a very big part of who I am.
Talk to me about Thumper. Isn't he part of the reason that you've been doing what you've been doing for a few decades now?
Thumper was my very first dog. And you, in order to understand Thumper, you have to recognize or realize that I did not grow up in a family that was blessed with a gift. I had it, and neither of my parents happened to have it.
By the gift, what we're talking about is this sense of connection with animals.
Correct, correct.
And now, my parents did not have
it. They did not have it. My aunt, who is a dog breeder, it did very much. And when I was growing up, probably 5 or 6 years old, she and I connived between the two of us, and she provided me with a little dog. And this little dog was a Sheltie, and my aunt bred Shelties and showed them. But Thumper had an accident when he was very young and had actually fractured his leg, and the veterinarian had put a cast on the leg, and as he walked around the house, he would thump. And so his name became Thumper. Because of the injury, he was not a good show candidate, and so Thumper became my companion.
But tell us about how your experience with Thumper, who ended up dying fairly young, I think he came into your life, as you said, when you were about 5 or 6,
mm-hmm.
and he left when you were maybe 12, 13?
Correct, yeah.
And he should not have left that soon.
No, he shouldn't have. I grew up in Florida, and in Florida there are two kinds of dogs. There's dogs that have heartworm disease, and there's dogs that are on heartworm preventives. And unfortunately, Thumper was not on heartworm preventives, and he contracted heartworm disease, And I remember the trip to the veterinarian where that was diagnosed, where the veterinarian put a blood slide under the microscope and allowed me to look under the microscope and see the larval forms of those worms called microfilaria squirming around in the blood. And I realized that this disease could have been prevented, and I wanted to be involved in saving animals at that point. And so that's kind of one of the first times when I was really able to articulate in my mind the career path that I chose very early on.
So you're 12 years old. Your dog, who you just love, I think you tell people that you were raised by a Sheltie.
I was.
Your parents actually had moved a fair amount, so there are lots of relocations. I think you had Colorado and Michigan and different
Tennessee
places.
And Florida. And
So Thumper was the constant.
Thumper was the constant. Yeah.
So we cannot overstress, I don't think, what kind of bond and importance there was for you with your friend Thumper. And you at the age of 12 are looking through a microscope at the disease that you've probably by that point come to understand is going to kill him, and it was completely preventable.
It was. Yeah, it was preventable.
And so in you sparks a desire. Is it correct to say, Bruce Costin, both to help people prevent the kind of suffering that you as this very young man are going through with the loss of your friend, but also to help more people understand the importance of this bond, people to gain the gift that your parents didn't have?
Yeah.
And if your parents had had it, they would have known more about how to make sure Thumper stayed healthy.
I think that's exactly true. And still, as I think about my practice, when I envision what my job is, it is secondarily treating the diseases that come to me. What I consider my job to be first and foremost is being the guardian of that bond between pet and people. And I achieve that goal by keeping the animal safe and keeping it healthy. But my job is to treat the bond.
Dr. Bruce Costin, author of the new book, The Gift of Pets, is our guest. So here's the basic question we are addressing this hour. What is it that makes the bond between human and pet so special? If you who are listening have a theory, we've got a phone line open for you at 888-WMRA-TALK. Or maybe you have a different question you would like to bring up. You're welcome to reach us with that as well at 888-967-2825. We have a comment here from Noel, and I just lost it on the page. So I'll try to find that in a moment. But in essence, I think what Noel, when I eventually find his comment here on my computer screen, Dr. Costin is going to talk about is his experience with a particular animal. What do people tell you about, you have clients who've come to you for years who've had dogs and cats and parakeets and hamsters for decades. I mean, the one pet will pass on, they'll get another and then another and another. Why do they keep going back, especially when they've gone through the suffering of losing a pet?
Because there's something in the heart of an animal lover that is not complete without sharing that relationship with an animal. And some people are cat lovers, some people are dog lovers, and of course other species as well. But there is something that pet brings, some intimacy that is different from the intimacy we get with people, that is just absolutely unique. And one of the things for me is just the ability to bond with a member of a species other than your own in such a deep way that you know each other. You really do know each other very well and come to depend on each other. There's something very, very unique and very special about that.
Okay, so here's Noel on the Virginia Insight Facebook page with this comment. Quote, Phoebe was a mixed breed dog who lived in our North End San Antonio neighborhood. She made the rounds and I enjoyed her company and on my breaks from work in my yard. She became pregnant and soon after began bringing the five pups with her on her rounds. The pups would play in our yard, and as the evenings cooled, we'd invite Phoebe and the pups into our home. Sometimes, just to take the chill off, we'd light a fire in our living room fireplace. At evening's end, I'd hold open the screen door for them to file out onto the porch and bid them each good evening. One evening, one pup stopped in the doorway, looked up at Mom, sisters, and brothers, looked back to the hearth, looked up at me, and returned to the hearth. Her name became Joy. Each day, she'd join her siblings and Mom for play, and each evening, she would bid them goodnight as they left, and she stayed. We were together for 16 years. She picked us. And as you may imagine, there are many other stories that could be told.
Oh, that is just a tremendous story and a wonderful name. That name grew out of that relationship, and that joy developed into a relationship that blossomed for 16 years. That's a wonderful story, and that is quintessential of the bond that people share with their animals.
Stories are what your books are made of, both the first one that was published 3 years ago, this new one that's just coming out this month by Bruce Costin, The Gift of Pets.
Releases tomorrow, actually.
There's a story about how you ended up writing these stories.
Yes, and I hate to tell on myself, because when I started writing these stories, they began as 500-word little vignettes in a local newspaper. One of my clients brought in a rabbit, and he wanted to talk about how his rabbit got fleas and how to get rid of them. And so we talked it through, and he said, well, why don't you write me an article on that, and I'll put it in my paper. And I thought, well, here's a way I can really build up my practice. I said, I'll write you an article once a month. And so for several months, I wrote articles, just wonderful, award-winning pieces, literary masterpieces on flea control and heartworm disease and intestinal parasites, and expecting the doors to be flooding with people. And I heard almost nothing. And then one day I was up against a deadline and didn't really have a topic to write about. And so I just wrote a simple story about, I don't even remember what that story was, about a pet and an owner and the impact that they had on each other. And I heard about that for weeks. And I said, wow, I can do this. This is much, much easier than writing informational pieces, because these stories happen every day. And so I wrote an article once a month in that newspaper, the Bryce Mountain Courier, for several years. And that became the backbone of the first book.
Okay, Bruce Costin. So here's the $50,000, maybe $500,000 question. How come you don't have horses?
Well, I am a horse lover from my very earliest years. Up until my junior year in veterinary school, I was planning to do horse practice. But as I went through my training in veterinary school, I realized that what's fun for me about veterinary medicine is the detective work and the internal medicine and the surgery and those kinds of things, which really challenge me. And we could do so much more of that with small animals than we can with horses. And so I really changed my focus from horse practice to small animal practice at that point in time. But I still envisioned myself having horses. But the fact is that my kids really didn't show much interest in horses, despite my heaviest efforts to try to recruit them to be horse lovers. That was a gene that didn't translate, apparently. And so they kind of went different ways with their interests, and we followed them.
And is it true to say that you found in the work that you did do early on when you were in school with horses that the difference between horse people and other kinds of small pet owners is there's more of this bond that intrigues you often with the small pet owners?
It is. In horse practice, there are certainly times when decisions are made not necessarily on the emotional bond with the pet, but on the economic realities that exist with horses. And so that's a big part of it, too.
Veterinarian Bruce Costin is our guest. His new book, The Gift of Pets, is our focus. We're going to ask him to read some from the book, as well as address some very specific questions. in terms of pet-related issues. We get to all of that when we get back in a bit more than 1 minute. To you who are listening, what are the best pets? 888-WMRA Talk is how to reach us by phone. Now, all of my colleagues who work on this program seem to be cat enthusiasts. In fact, one of our producers went so far as to put together a promo for this show featuring music claiming this was the year of the cat. That, of course, as any good dog lover knows, is simply not the case. But whether your best friend is feline, canine, four-legged, two-legged, or no-legged, if you want to tell us about them, 888-967-2825 is our number. On Facebook, we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight.
Well, having been raised by Thumper, my dog, my dad was allergic to cats, so there was no possibility for us to have cats growing up. My first cat was Ollie, and I didn't get him till after I was out of veterinary school. So my perception of cats was that they were just independent. They didn't care about you. You were a warm lap to lay on and an appliance to open the refrigerator door. And Ollie changed my entire viewpoint of what cats can be. He was an incredibly responsive, communicative pet, and he was wonderful. So I currently have three cats now and a dog.
So I'm both
a dog
take
and a cat person.
You don't take sides on the great
I don't take sides, no.
Okay, but when we have pet days on WMRA, you're still allowed to contribute in the name of cats and dogs or any other pet. Let's turn to page 165 in your book. There is something here in your treatment of, I believe it was a dog named Muffin, that spoke to one of the challenges of the line of work that you're in and the philosophy that you work with that many people wouldn't know about.
Well, Muffin was just a wonderful little dog, belonged to an elderly couple, and she came in for one of the very most routine of procedures, just a quick little teeth cleaning and take a couple of unsightly growths off. And during the process of examining Muffin, I felt something in her abdomen that didn't quite feel right. I first thought she had a big bladder. I sent her out to urinate. She came back in. This was still there. And as I was feeling this lump in her belly, all of a sudden, I felt it change shapes. Felt like something just exploded in my fingers. And I realized that this was a tumor that had just ruptured. And so what had started out as a completely routine event suddenly had transformed into a life-threatening emergency. The story ends well. We took Muffin to surgery. I found that there was a big tumor in the spleen. It had ruptured. It was bleeding internally, but I was able to get the spleen out. Came back a benign growth, and Muffin lived several years after that. But as so often happens, these patients teach me something every time. And this is my ruminations after treating Muffin.
So this is Dr. Bruce Costin reading from his new book, The Gift of Pets, right in the center of the book, page 165.
I have thought of Muffin often since then, reliving the stomach-churning feeling of that tumor crumbling in my hand. The realization flooding me that what had begun as a mundane event had erupted in an instant into a full-throated emergency, thrusting a beloved life into the balance. It was a defining moment. One of many that separated me from my nonchalance and reminded me that few things in life are truly routine. Every trip to the grocery store, every interaction with friends, each moment of every day overflows with an abundance of promise, of adventure, of risk, an event. A life is routine only when we fail to appreciate its potential. Succumbing to the habit of experiencing everyday activities as drudgery or routine is simply too expensive a price to pay, for it sentences the whole of life to complacency. Embracing the excitement in the mundane, however, transforms each task into an adventure. Routine living occurs by default. Living life fully in the moment, fully alive, requires a conscious choice. That's what Muffin taught me.
888-WMRA Talk is how to reach us by phone. 888-967-2825. On Facebook, we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Please feel free to communicate with us through either venue if you want to talk with the author of the new book, The Gift of Pets, veterinarian Bruce Costin. We have this, Bruce, on our Facebook page from Betty, who says, my Labrador retriever, Hank, has a watchful eye on the passerby, many of whom are walking their dogs. Hank steps up on a hassock placed in front of the large living room window. Sometimes he just wags his tail at what he sees, animal or human. Sometimes he whines in a pitiful, I really love that one. And always, always, if it is the UPS truck, he barks nonstop until the truck leaves our area.
Well, my dog does that too. In fact, my dog gets so worked up over the UPS delivery man that one time when the delivery truck came, she got so excited she ruptured her anterior cruciate ligament, and I had to fix it. So it's for some reason, I don't know what it is about the UPS guy. The mailman gets the same treatment very often. But very often, dogs identify them as foreign invaders, and they will just absolutely focus in on them. And maybe it has to do with the fact that they're repeat offenders.
Different animals and different dogs, as a matter of fact, dogs of the same breed, maybe even same family, will respond different ways to the kinds of stimuli that Betty was just mentioning. From some of the stories that you tell in this book, Bruce, it sounds like you credit many of these animals with a quality of intelligence and understanding of the world around them that non-pet lovers just wouldn't identify with.
Mm, I think that's absolutely true. And as science gets into this more and more, there are ways that these animals perceive their world that are far beyond what we can understand. Jane Goodall has an absolutely wonderful documentary. It's called When Animals Speak, and it talks about the communication between animals and between animals and people that occurs on levels that we're not often aware of. And it's absolutely fascinating to see some of the things that she brings out in this documentary. And people know this at a gut level. How often do you come home and you find your dog waiting at the window watching for your car to come home? They're always there. How do they know when it is that you are going to be home, when your schedule may not always be predictable for them? And yet somehow they know. And there are many ways that animals communicate at levels that we're really not aware of.
How important are pets?
I guess that depends on who you ask. For my clients who bring their pets in, those are not just Spot the dog and Fluffy the cat. Those are members of the family and require the same degree of commitment as most any other member of the family. And some people who listen to this will simply not understand that, and other people know that intimately. But pets have tremendous value in our culture. They provide companionship. Lots and lots of studies have shown health benefits that are conferred upon people when they interact with animals on a regular basis.
Haven't I heard you say, Bruce Costin, that people in America place a much higher priority on pets today than they did even a couple of decades ago?
I think that's true. I think that's true. Think back, you know, how often do I hear a client come in and say, you know, I had a dog when I was a kid, we had a dog lived on the farm, and why he never got any attention, and he lived till he was 8 or 9. And you know, nowadays, it's routine for us to see a patient 3 or 4 times a year. And I think because of the added attention that they get, the lifespans of these patients have significantly increased over time.
So I ask you to explain the bond between humans and pets. I've asked you to talk some about the gift. You actually talk about it pretty eloquently in your book here, and I think this section begins on Is it page 10 or 11?
11.
Could you read that to me, please?
Sure. This is talking about a family that I envied a great deal because these kids were raised in a family where their pets were very important, and the family was named the Harveys. The Harvey children will emerge from Danielle's home with at least one wonderful legacy. They will have learned that to love animals is a blessing to be cherished, that having pets is a responsibility one must take seriously and for which one is rewarded with loyalty and trust. They have experienced the wonder of bonding with an individual of a different order with whom communication occurs on levels far deeper than mere words, where the ties are stronger than time, and where the rewards are not measured by how much can be reciprocated by an animal, but by how much we are willing to invest of ourselves. These valuable life lessons are best learned under the tutelage of animals. The Harvey kids have grown up with the gift of valuing animals, of loving a pet so wholly that the ache at parting is indelibly insinuated into their futures, of receiving devotion untainted by duplicity, of experiencing unequaled loyalty and unveiled adoration.
Are there people, Dr. Costin, who should not have pets?
Yes, there are.
And do you see them in your practice occasionally?
Yes, I do. I do see them every now and then. For the most part, my clients are like the clients of most veterinary hospitals that care very deeply. But there are some people who don't experience the bond to the same degree. And their commitment to their pet may be limited by how significantly the pet may hamper their mobility or inconvenience them or cause other kinds of things that animals do. And both for their own sake and for the sake of the animals, some of these people would be better to find other outreaches, other ways to spend their time.
Is it sometimes that the people could have a pet, but just not this particular type of pet?
Oh,
this rambunctious a dog.
Oh, sure. I wish more people would, before they get that pet, spend some time with their veterinarian and kind of explore what are my options in a pet? What kind of breed of dog or cat matches with my lifestyle best? And those kinds of comments will go very far in ensuring the success of that pet family relationship. Yeah.
Veterinarian and author Bruce Costin, our guest, 888-WMRA-TALK, our number. From Woodstock, I think this is Dionne. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Well, more or less, yes. That's close enough.
How about if you tell us what it is?
It's Dionne.
Dionne, thanks so much for calling. Your question or comment, please.
Thank you. Hi there. It's such a pleasure to have an opportunity to connect with you.
Thank you.
On a topic that is so dear to our hearts, obviously. My thought is the emotional health of children growing up with animals, that there is a lesson in the compelling nature of empathy that is learned hands-on. And I think if every family allowed the children to care for and be responsible for an animal, they would then see others as deserving of the same need for comfort and love that they feel they have in their own being. So it seems to me it's a deep, essential human need, and that we might have less trouble if we had people who understood that need give their children that opportunity to experience it.
I think that's a powerful observation you've made. And there are a tremendous number of life lessons that can be best learned from animals. Children can learn the realities of life and death in the loss of a pet and have some experience with that before they have to face that in losing grandma or grandpa or someone else that they dearly love. So, yes, I think there are wonderful lessons that can be learned best in our association with pets.
Thank you.
Dionne, thank you so much for calling. Bruce Costin is author of two books. The first, Ask the Animals, was published in 2009 to much critical acclaim. The second is just hitting shelves this month and seems likely to win many kudos as well. It is titled The Gift of Pets, Stories Only a Vet Could Tell. Throughout Shenandoah County, however, Dr. Costin is still best known as the owner-operator of Seven Bends Veterinary Hospital, the facility that first opened its doors back in 1992. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. Our next call coming in from Waynesboro. Anna, thanks for joining us. Your question or comment, please.
Hi. I've been raised with cats all my life, and as an adult, I've had several cats. I adopted two siblings that had been orphaned. They were less than a pound when I adopted them, and I bottle-fed them for a while. And they grew to be healthy, happy adults. At about 4 years of age, the female presented with hemolytic anemia. And when I took her to the vet over the course of about 2 weeks, she was dead. And at the end of her life, she had a mass in her chest. Two years later, her brother presented with hemolytic anemia and was dead within a month. I wonder if you've had experience in your practice. My vet said that he had never seen that degree of anemia in cats that young who didn't have an underlying cancer.
That's a terrible story. I'm so sorry for your loss. Especially when you get the terrible 1-2 punch of losing one and then the other to the same disease. Hemolytic anemia is a very, very serious disease, and we have some success in treating that particular disease, but very often we don't. And I would say at least 50% of the cases that I have seen in my practice are what we call idiopathic. Idiopathic is a term that means we don't identify the cause of that disease. It remains unknown. I explain it to my clients that idiopathic means none of us idiots can figure it out. But there are a number of cases that are idiopathic, and then there are a number of them that are related to tumors. And the tumors apparently will coat the red blood cells with proteins that fool the system into thinking that those red cells are then foreign invaders and the immune system kills them. It's a very, very bad disease. So sorry for your loss.
And if it's not too intrusive a question, I'm curious how long the brother cat, how long ago he died?
He died about 6 months ago.
Hmm. Do you have new cats in your family
of
now?
Of course, we okay. do. When the female died, because her brother had been accustomed to having a companion, we got him a companion. They got along very well. Then when the male died, the cat that had been the replacement for female was used to having a companion.
Mm-hmm.
So we got him a companion, and we've been blessed that they have just, our cats have just been quite devoted to each other. I guess what was so terrible for us is when the male cat became ill and it took him to the vet, and they looked at his gums. And they were white. And I said, not again.
Yeah.
We can't do this again.
Oh, that's just a terrible thing. I'm so sorry. Yeah.
Anna, thank you for all the sadness involved for sharing your story with us. Now, there is a fair amount of sadness and death in this book of yours, Bruce, but yet somehow it's not depressing. So I want to ask you how you manage that when we continue here. In just a bit more than 60 seconds. Owner and medical director of Seven Bends Veterinary Hospital, Bruce Costin is our guest. His newest book is titled The Gift of Pets, Stories Only a Vet Could Tell. And unfortunate number of these stories at some point involve a pet dying.
Well, it's true. I mean, that is part of being an animal lover. These pets that insinuate themselves into our hearts don't live as long as we do. And if you are an animal lover, that does sentence you to bearing the loss of these pets with some frequency. Irving Townsend, in his book, The Once Again Prince, has a wonderful, wonderful quote that I just love. It says, "We who choose to surround ourselves with lives even more temporary than our own live within a fragile circle, easily and often breached. Unable to accept its awful gaps, we still would live no other way. We cherish memory as the only certain immortality, never understanding the necessary plan." So yes, it is a terrible thing that we have to face loss. And yet, the hurt that we experience at loss is simply a testament to the degree of importance these pets hold in our lives. If they were not important to us, it would not be difficult to lose them. And so I always think about loss of a pet, the sadness that accompanies that loss, as a gravestone on our hearts that sets a memorial to that pet in our heart.
Patricia in Woodstock, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment for Bruce Costin, please.
Yes, hello, Dr. Costin. I want to thank you so much for your books. Our granddaughter is 15. She's an aspiring veterinarian.
She
has a 5.0 average.
Good for her. She'll need it.
She's in advanced placement, and she's in a special medical track. It's called Dennis Medical Academy. It's a special program in her high school, and she's also in Florida. What a coincidence, because you live there, I believe.
Yes, indeed. That's wonderful. Keep encouraging her.
And I'm getting your books for her because I know they'll be a great inspiration for her.
Well, thank you. I hope she enjoys them very much. I grew up reading the books of James Herriot and feeling that same excitement about what it was that I would be doing. And so I hope this provides her the same kinds of stimulation for her interest that James Herriot's books provided for me.
Patricia, if it's okay to ask, what's your daughter's name?
That's our granddaughter.
Oh, your granddaughter. I'm sorry.
You flatter me. No, I'm a grandma, and she's Emmy.
And how old is Emmy?
She is 15.
And how long has she wanted to be a vet?
She has a Shih Tzu and a Golden Retriever.
And how long has Emmy wanted to be a vet?
You know, I think from day one. And unfortunately, grandma is not a pet lover, but I try, to...
Well, Patricia, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because one of the ways to try to understand this bond or gift, as Bruce calls it, is to talk to people who don't feel that way about pets. So I'm curious, how do you see this idea that there can be such a deep, special bond between some people and some animals?
Well, I just see the joy her pets bring her and how, devoted she is and really how determined she is to be a veterinarian. I keep saying, well, in the beginning I used to say, Emmy, don't you want to be a people doctor? And then people have told me, no, don't discourage her from her true love. And they're right.
Yeah.
Patricia, thanks so much for your call. Dr. Costin, it's actually a lot easier to get into medical school as a people doctor.
Well,
there are
very, very fewer veterinary schools in the U.S. and Canada than there are medical schools. And so the competition for each spot at a veterinary school is incredibly keen. And so, yes, it is more difficult to get accepted into veterinary school than it is to get accepted into medical school. And that's an interesting thing, but reason enough to encourage Emmy to keep her nose in the books, keep her GPA up. She will benefit from learning how to study while she's in high school. She won't have the luxury of 3 or 4 semesters of messing around in college. She needs to kind of get her GPA high early on. So encourage her. That's important.
No pressure. Veterinarian Bruce Costin is our guest. His newest book, The Gift of Pets, is our focus. Our call-in number, 888-WMRA Talk, from Vesuvius. Gail, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Hi. I know what the gift is because I was raised with lots of animals, mostly cats. Instead of playing with a baby doll, I dressed a cat up. That carried through. Let me see. My granddad had a German Shepherd, and he was tragically killed when I was a young girl, and my grandmother was allowed to bring the dog into the funeral parlor, and Ringo was his name. He looked at my granddad, who they were inseparable his whole life, and he cried, and he put his paw, he sat down on his hinds and put his paw on top of my granddad.
Mm.
Okay, so I've had two German Shepherds of my own. And in the last, a few years ago, my Shepherd, she and my Golden Retriever and I, my husband, were on vacation. And the Golden was in trouble. So I was in one room, my husband in the other, and our Shepherd scratched at the door to warn me that the Golden was bleeding profusely from his mouth. Well, story short, Lyme disease, he required a blood transfusion. We rushed into Dover, Delaware, and he got a transfusion from a greyhound, and he's now a very healthy, robust dog.
That's an interesting point. We are seeing a lot of Lyme disease recently. In the last 5 years, the incidence of Lyme disease has dramatically increased in this area. And so we see Lyme disease often. I had a case of Lyme disease earlier in the morning.
So what's the best preventative? Something to keep ticks off the animals?
Absolutely. There are very good quality flea and tick products that are topical now that you can apply once every month, and they do a very good job.
Do you feel comfortable naming names?
There are a number of products that are good. In our hospital, we lean toward a product called Vectra 3D. Historically, we have used Frontline and Advantix, and those are good products as well, although they've been on the market for a long time, and so I think we're seeing some decreased efficacy over time. And then, of course, the other thing is to be vaccinating these dogs for Lyme disease. There is a very effective vaccine available for Lyme disease that can be given. But don't let your tick protection down, because there are a number of other diseases beside Lyme disease that we can get from ticks that you can't vaccinate for.
Gail, thank you so very much for your call. Next is Stewart's Draft. James, you're on Hi. Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for veterinarian Bruce Costin, please.
Hi, thank you. This is going to sound adversarial at worst and cynical at best, and I don't mean it to sound either one. It's just something that has been on my mind for years, because I've had cat after cat. I'm a dog person, but I know I can't have a dog because I can't walk it, so I have cats. There's a local vet, and I won't name names, but it seemed to me that when I walked into that vet's office, I was being lined up to do her next boat payment. A number of duplicative tests. There was a urinalysis. Now I can understand one urinalysis to diagnose and one urinalysis to find if it's been cured. But
James, I apologize for cutting you short, but we are running short on time and we're having a little trouble with your cell phone signal. So let me see if I can get the gist of what you're saying. Is you're concerned that there are vets out there who are just there to make as much money as possible off of whoever they can? Is that basically
Bingo.
Your point?
Bingo.
Okay. Yeah.
And because they have you.
Well, James, hold on. Let Bruce respond.
Certainly. I can appreciate that. There's certainly there in any field, there are people who approach things one way and people who approach things differently. And certainly veterinarians are not immune from finding their motivation in financial rewards. I can say that for the most part, veterinary medicine, though it is an expense, when we compare it to the same thing that occurs in human medicine, it is the best bargain in healthcare around. And so while, for instance, if we have to do an orthopedic surgery, I have to repair a bone, and the bill for that is $1,500. The same bill for a human would be $15,000. So we do a pretty good job at keeping these costs low. What makes it seem to be so high is that we don't get the assistance of insurance for the most part, et cetera.
James, thank you so much for taking the time to share your perspective. One of the things that's striking about both of your books, Bruce Costin, is the degree to which you, and I imagine most any other person who runs a veterinary practice, has to do so many things that for human beings, you would have lots of different specialists doing. And you do mm-hmm. them for dogs and for cats and for snakes and for parrots. I mean, going into an operating room and handling things that for a human being, you'd have six specialists doing. That being said, it does seem to me that there are going to be people out there who really feel like they got taken to the cleaners when they moved to a new community and they got a new vet and they suddenly found that it wasn't nearly as good an experience as the last vet they were at. So how do you find a new vet?
That's a good question. I think the first thing is you want to find people who approach their pets the same way you do. And then find out where they go and appreciate the veterinary care that they receive. And then I think I would do a trial trip. Go into the hospital, maybe ask about flea control or something that you don't have to commit to patient care for, and see how the feel in that practice is. Is there tension in the practice? Do people get along? Are there people in the waiting room who are glad to be there? How are those people interacting with the pets that are there in the waiting room? So those are important things about finding a veterinarian. And it's true, veterinarians are really the last generalists that there are. I mean, there certainly are veterinary specialists. So for every human specialty, there is a corollary veterinary specialist as well. But for the most part, we access those specialists much less frequently for our patients. So one patient that I see is going to be an orthopedic patient, and the next one may be a dermatology case, and the next one internal medicine, and on and on. And that's one of the things that really makes my practice really, really enjoyable is the variety. And not only is there variety—
I still don't understand how you know to treat parakeets and snakes and hamsters and cats. But before we run out of time, let's make time for Kathy in Forestville. Kathy, you're on Virginia Insight with Dr. Bruce Costin.
All right, real quick, because I just want him to repeat what he said two calls ago about the flea control. I'm having a heck of a time with my little shih tzu with her fleas. I put all kinds of Avantix and stuff, and it doesn't seem to be helping. What was that
It's Vectra 3D is the product that we sell in our hospital. There's a number of different things out there, and all of them can be very good. The key, I think, is that you do it consistently over time. You can also use a flea spray in your house, and that will shorten the lag time. If you use these topical products...
everything, so I know what you're saying with that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Well, it's like I've got six cats, two dogs, and chickens, you know, so it's like animals.
You've got to treat everybody or else don't make much headway.
Kathy, we're running out of time, but Bruce, please take time to just complete what you're saying about treating your house as well.
If you don't treat your house, most of the fleas that are in the environment are fleas that the animal has farmed. And so you've got to get rid of the flea infestation in the house. For every flea in the animal, there's 10 to 100 in the environment. So you've got to treat the house as well.
We have less than 2 minutes left. Can you tell us about Lisa in that amount of time?
Lisa was the very first technician that I had in my practice. She came to me as a kennel assistant. She was had experienced very downtrodden young life and... she was lacking in self-esteem, and she came into the practice, and I encouraged her over time to go to veterinary technician school, and she came out, and because of the gift that she had with animals, which provided the motivation for her to reinvent herself, she transformed
came alive
herself.
When she was around animals.
She absolutely came alive when she was around animals, and using that gift, she provided herself with a career, and she was an incredibly efficient and skilled veterinary technician that was an integral part of my practice.
And another sad story it ends up in this
Another
book.
Sad story. Another
because
sad story.
She was diagnosed somewhere in her 30s with lung cancer?
She was. She was diagnosed with lung cancer, and over about a year and a half, we lost her at the age of 38. Very sad story, but... a very noble and courageous one. And that's really the key that, you know, when I think about Lisa, I don't concentrate on the sadness. I concentrate on the reformation of her life that the pets and her focus on the gift provided her. And that's uplifting for me.
You have some book signings coming up. We've got 20 seconds for you to tell us about them if you want to.
Tomorrow evening at my hospital, we are doing a book signing. The book releases August 7th of 2012.
Okay, so this is going to be Tuesday, August 7th.
Yes, at my office from
5
to 8
p.m. Because when this is repeated in a different time continuum, tomorrow is not going to exist in the same way.
That's true. August 7th, 2012, at my office, we are having a book release, a signing, and an open house at the office, and we'd love to give you a tour through. I'm also going to be at the Barnes & Noble in Harrisonburg, August 17th of 2012, from 5 to 8 p.m. That's a Sunday evening. And at the Books a Million in Harrisonburg, August 19th is Sunday. August 17th is a Friday. I'll be at the Books a Million, 2 to 4 p.m. on Sunday.
Okay, so let me tell you listening that our guest has been Dr. Bruce Costin, medical director of Seven Bends Veterinary Hospital in Woodstock, Virginia, and author of the new book, The Gift of Pets, Stories Only a Vet Could Tell. Bruce, thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I also want to tell you who are listening that if you go to the Virginia Insight page at WMRA.org, you can connect with a whole bunch of information about Bruce, his work, and probably more information about what book signings are going to be when. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.